have something very special for you. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, as you know, traveled the world under President Trump. We were able to interview him before the Biden speech. We were supposed to do it after, because Biden was so late, we had to do the interview before. We did it on tape. Roll it. So, Mr. Secretary, here's what I don't understand. I'm a simple man, as you well know, okay? There doesn't seem to be a lot of benefit for Putin here. He doesn't have economic benefit taking this portion of Ukraine. He's going to cause himself and his country a lot of economic pain, right? So cost-benefit analysis, why is the guy doing this? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think there's a couple reasons. One is this is part of his theory of the case of the greater Soviet Union, right? He wants to go back and have a buffer for his country. I think he feels this personally. When I spent time with him, he would talk about greater Russia and Russian history. We saw him explicate that a little bit. I guess it was yesterday when he made his long speech. He feels aggrieved and he wants to vindicate that. So I think that's one piece. Second, I think he sees a weak West. I think he sees a weak United States. I think he sees Germany that is a supplicant because of the energy needs. And he thinks he can push and push and push. So you know, your point about the cost and benefit, I think he believes that the cost will end up ultimately being something he can truly manage. The upside, if you're Vladimir Putin, is that you get to create and sow chaos in the West. You get to upset the apple cart in many ways.
He definitely wants to drive a wedge between the NATO countries, but Germany this morning came out and said Nord Stream 2, they're going to suspend certification now on it. Putin has invested $15 billion in that. And Biden is going to hurt him on the dollar transactions. So Putin's going to get hurt. And for this kind of dream that I'm going to be the Russian Napoleon, I'm going to restore the glory, it seems to me to be megalomaniacal. Am I wrong?
There's a piece of that. This is, Bill, you've watched this guy an awfully long time. I've spent time with him. There's a piece of that that is at the center of his personality. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you're right about some of the costs, but remember, he's been through this before. When he took Crimea, he was threatened with big sanctions. He survived just peachy. He just needs to take care of his eight oligarchs. If the Russian people suffer, not his first choice, but you know, not the end for him. And finally, don't forget the benefit he's getting. I don't know what it's trading at as we sit here. $97 a barrel, $98 Brent crude. That is an enormous windfall for Russia when energy prices are 50% higher than they were a year ago and 100% higher than they were during the 4 years we were in office.
But he's not going to be able to get dollars for the oil. So if he wants yen, he'll get yen. He's not going to get dollars for it. Now, I spent some time with President Trump recently, as you may know, with the O'Reilly Trump history tour. I got to reverse that, Trump O'Reilly history tour. And he told me flat out, if he were president today, if he were reelected, Putin would not be doing any of this. Do you believe that?
I do. Best evidence, Bill, that I have, the only thing that's changed was who was leading the United States of America. Vladimir Putin hasn't changed. His view of the world hasn't changed. His calculus simply changed because America was weak.
All right. So Trump told me that he had an arrangement with Putin, and the arrangement went down. It was a personal arrangement. It wasn't you and Lavrov, wasn't a negotiator. It was, you don't embarrass me, I won't embarrass you. Was that your understanding?
You know, I don't want to speak to that. If the president wants to talk about that publicly, so be it. I can say this. Look, we lived under this crazy, silly Russia hoax for 2.5 years of the Trump administration, where everyone thought we were Russian assets or weak on Russia. I think we can see that that wasn't the case. And so there were a set of understandings that were taking place that led us to a place where we had a deterrence. We put sanctions on Vladimir Putin when he did bad things. But when we found places we could work with him, I did it at the CIA. We took down, we saved Russian lives in St. Petersburg. Putin personally thanked me for that publicly. We had a set of understandings that said, here are the things we can do that can lead our two countries to find perhaps a better path forward, and European security and stability on a better path forward as well.
Now, most Americans, including me, really didn't understand that Donald Trump, while he was in office, did sanction the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, that there wasn't any, they built it, but there was a sanction on it. What was that sanction that Joe Biden removed almost the first day he was in office?
It was a set of prohibitions that sanctioned companies from, to your point, back to the dollar, from using dollars to transact activity around the pipeline. So think of shipbuilders, think of construction companies, think of pipe laying equipment, think of the people who underwrite that, the insurers who create the liability protection for those companies. Those were the things that he unwound. There were Treasury Department sanctions largely that prevented dollars from going to the project.
Okay. Biden, without any explanation, immediately removed those. Was there a gain for the USA in that removal?
From my perspective, there's not much to be gained. I think he was doing it to try and build out relationships with Germany in particular, and perhaps Europe even more significantly. I think that's the only upside one could describe. Remember, while he's doing that, he is essentially taking down the American energy industry. So I think there was a climate hook to this as well. I think he believed, hey, if we can do this in America, we can shut this down. We'll give the Germans what they want for natural gas because they need the energy. They've already shut down significant pieces of their energy complex. We can reach climate accords that'll make the world a safer, happier place. I think that was their theory.
Okay. What is the difference, in your opinion, between you and Anthony Blinken, the current Secretary of State? What is the difference?
Well, it always starts for anybody who works in a presidential administration is we have very different bosses. I had a boss who understood about power, understood how to use American economic power, and was prepared to allow me to travel the world and use American power to protect the things that mattered most to the United States and to set the priorities in a way that actually secured American prosperity and freedom. Though it was shorthanded as America first, but the truth is, the truth is, when you send John Kerry to be the first American senior official to meet with Xi Jinping and Putin, you are signaling American weakness. You're signaling that you'll sacrifice just about anything on the altar of climate change. And if you're Secretary Blinken, that puts you in a very difficult place when you're trying to push back on the bad guys across the world.
Okay. Now, I reported yesterday, and I don't know if any other national news agency did report it, of a massive coal deal where Russia and Putin are going to ship coal to China, who, as you know, are building coal plants, okay? And we're talking hundreds of thousands of tons of coal. So it doesn't stack that the Biden administration is trying to rein in our fossil fuel industry when the two largest rivals, Russia and China, are saying, we don't care about global warming, climate change, we're going to pump as much coal into the atmosphere as we want. Yet the American media doesn't cover it. I would submit to you that 99% of Americans don't even know this. And that's a pretty frightening scenario, is it not?
Oh, Billy, you've nailed it. The administration traveled at the beginning of its time to Copenhagen for a climate summit where the Chinese lied flat out and said, oh, we'll reduce our carbon footprint. While on the ground, the reality was opening about a coal-fired power plant every couple of weeks. And this is the other big difference, Bill. When it came to energy, when it came to lots of issues, we accepted the world as it was. We didn't live in a fantasy world. It is not the case that the Chinese Communist Party is ever going to submit to restrictions on their carbon footprint until they've got an economy that is twice the size of ours. They're going to grow. They're going to do the right things for their own people. To your point about the Russians, they are massive importers of energy, not only coal, but natural gas and crude oil as well. They are reliant on the world for their energy, and we ought to use the American energy sources that we have that are affordable and clean and drive the Chinese Communist Party to have to pay really high prices for their
energy. Yeah, you just misspoke a little. You said Russia is massively dependent. It's
no,
China.
China.
That,
yes,
China that's massively dependent. Now, does the Putin Xi, of course, the president of China, does their newfound friendship worry you, or is this just cosmetic?
And it's hard to know, and in part depends on how the West behaves. Today, I think it's cosmetics. Today, I think it's a relationship of opportunity. In the moment, they found a a relationship that benefits them for the time, but they have lots of interests that are divergent. Yet we should make no mistake. If the West continues to allow them to walk all over us, they'll find a way to work together, and we'll end up living in a world that is very different than ours. And we'll have a Russia-Sino pact that puts them in the front seat and puts the West, these central ideas of human dignity and security, in the back seat. We can't let that happen, Bill.
Okay, two more questions. What would you advise President Biden to do now to punish Vladimir Putin, very specifically?
I'll give you four thoughts that you could do with a stroke of a pen. He needs no congressional support to do it, just the support of the American people. First, take them out of SWIFT so that it's hard for them to conduct transactions in dollars, and go after their metals trade and the oligarchs. Those are the things that have kept Vladimir Putin in power. Those will be the things that threaten him, and you can do those nearly immediately. Second, I would be on the phone and tell NATO, you need to move your forces, your teams, your dollars to help your eastern friends. So think France, Germany, the UK, go to Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia to make sure that Putin understands that there is a real blunting force available to Europe. And then finally, I would make the case to the American people about why this matters. Maybe that's the most important thing of all. You have to describe that we'll have higher fertilizer costs, higher costs for a loaf of bread, higher costs for gasoline in the United States. If we allow Putin free rein, if we let him move about the cabin, it has real world impacts on us here at home. And when those things go higher, Bill, we know what inflation spirals look like. You only need to look back to the 70s and Jimmy Carter.
I don't know if the American people have enough discipline to suffer for a greater good that might be down the road. But I do know if we don't punish Putin, that Putin's not going to stop. It looks to me he's a sociopath, he's a narcissist, and a megalomaniac. I mean, that's a pretty strong trifecta, all right? It looks to me that he wants to break down world order and then rebuild it from the Soviet, maybe Chinese point of view. China takes Asia, and then he takes the sphere of influence that Soviet Union used to have. That looks to me about what he wants to do. And if that's the case, then we're going to enter into a new Cold War. Am I wrong?
Bill, it's precisely correct. It's why we need to get after this now. You remember the old Fram Oil commercials, right? You can pay me now, or you can pay me later. The president should be out making the case to the American people that we are better to do this now, stop him now. Xi Jinping will ultimately drive the destruction of the current world order in a way that Vladimir Putin can't, but he is happy to be the supporting actor in that very, very dangerous movie for the United States of America.
Mr. Secretary, I can't thank you enough for your expertise,
your patriotism
to this country, and you're welcome anytime on the No Spin News, and we really appreciate you helping us out today.
Thank you, Bill. Have a good day, sir.
Hey, guys, it's Vivek Ramaswamy here, inviting you to listen to my podcast, Truth. We just relaunched it after the campaign, and we are already riding up the podcast charts. Here's why. I think that hard, in-depth conversations about the tough issues is the only way we're going to get this country back. Because make no mistake, we are currently in a war for the future of America, and you cannot win a war unless you're willing to speak the truth. If you want standard conservative talking points, this podcast is not for you. But if you want to go deeper and hear the conversations you're not going to find anywhere else, the conversations that will challenge you, that will challenge me, then subscribe to Truth with Vivek Ramaswamy on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And I promise you, you're going to cover terrain that you're not going to hear elsewhere.
So I'm about right now 8 miles from the New York City border as I talk to you. And New York City is collapsing under the weight of violent crime. And so is Chicago, and so is L.A., and many, many other towns. Philadelphia, highest homicide rate on record. Portland, Oregon, highest homicide rate. Louisville, Kentucky, Albuquerque, New Mexico, all have one thing in common. They're run by progressives. So I've said this before, but it is worth repeating. Progressive people do not want to punish criminals, even violent criminals, because they believe American society is evil, and American society makes people criminals, manufactures criminals. So the criminals themselves are really not the problem. It's American society. That's the underlying philosophy of restorative justice, of all of these Nobel laws that are allowing violent people not to be punished. And that's why violent crime is rising, and all crime is rising, because the justice system is not punishing these people. It's not hard. Now, my question is, when will the American people revolt against the progressives? You're seeing it a little bit in Los Angeles. This crazy district attorney in LA County, George Gasson, okay, 98% of the prosecutors working for him want him removed. There's one prosecutor who doesn't, and all the others want him removed because he will not enforce the law in LA County, the nation's largest. It's insane. But until people get out and start to demonstrate against it, all right, just as the people with George Floyd did what they did. Now, I'm not saying that if you are pro law enforcement and pro justice, you burn stuff down and do it. No. But politicians got to see you. Now, Gasson's going to get recalled, but it's going to take a while. In the meantime, people are dying all over the place. So I cast around and try to find somebody who understands the problem and may have a solution to the political side of this problem. So here in New York, Hochul, the governor, and the legislature in Albany, they're not going to revoke the Nobel law. No matter how many people die, they're not going to do it. In Chicago, we've seen year after year after year, mostly poor black citizens getting gunned down in the street. And the governor won't do anything, and the mayor won't either. All right, so I found a guy named Vince Everett Ellison. He is the author of a book, 23 Lies, or 25 Lies, exposing Democrats' most dangerous, seductive, damnable, destructive lies and how to refute them. He's a former correctional officer, so he knows the justice system, and he joins us now from Amherst, Virginia. Okay, first question is on your correctional experience, and then we'll get into your theories. What percentage of the criminals in the prison where you were flat out evil? No matter what you did, they were going to hurt people. What percentage would you put on it?
Oh, I'd put about 10%. We had this saying that said that 10% of the prisoners caused 90% of the problems, just like in society. And we knew exactly who they were. So yeah, it was about 10%.
But that's a lot of people if you in a city of 8.5 million like New York City. That's 850,000 hardcore evil people roaming around. And they're not being punished.
So yeah, that's in the prison system. Out of the population, it's about, you know, 1/10 maybe 1%. You can take 100 people in a city of 100,000 people, and they can drive it crazy, 100 criminals. So what, you know, but what I found here is that this guy was a Soviet dissident. His name was Yuri Bezmenov. He said that the Soviet Union, they just demoralized the population. And once you demoralize the population, they cannot hear the truth. A demoralized man will not listen to the truth. And that's what they've done in the inner cities. So the inner cities are not going to change this. As you see, Chicago has been a criminal empire, and Detroit and Memphis for the past 50, 60, 70 years. And they keep electing Democrats because the people are demoralized. The citizens of the United States of America are going to have to finally say, these Democrats are going to bring this to our town. This is their model. They've always used violence and terror to demoralize and destroy the black community and keep it under control. And they're not going to stop because they keep getting 90% of the black vote. And until we, people like me and you, Bill, and you're doing it every day just like I am, until we can convince other Americans that they're coming after you and your children, this is their plan, we're not going to change it.
All right, but it shouldn't have to be very hard because the people in Chicago see it with their own eyes. They're burying people every day. So,
but they are demoralized.
All right, I understand the demoralization.
Are in a state of learned helplessness, but they cannot do anything.
I get it, but they're human beings, and you would assume that most of them are rational, even though they're demoralized, and they're seeing that the people they elect, all right, are not solving the problem, and indeed the problems are getting worse. They're seeing rampant drug addiction.
Stockholm syndrome. Yeah, Stockholm syndrome. I mean, yeah, you know, it was doing back to the Confederacy. Abraham Lincoln had to issue the Emancipation Proclamation, but because the slaves were digging the ditches and the trenches and putting up the fortifications to help the Confederacy keep them enslaved. In 1876, black people voted for the Confederacy. They voted for the Democrats in the election of 1876. The whole South went blue, and no white Confederates could vote. Black people voted them back in. And in 1860, even though Eisenhower and Nixon had passed the 1957 Civil Rights Act and the 1960 Civil Rights Act, giving black people a right to vote down South, black people voted for Kennedy and Johnson, who had basically tried to scuttle both acts. It has always been that black people had a fatal attraction to the Democrat Party. It came from slavery, it's cognitive dissonance, and it stays even today because we've done nothing in this country to ever change it.
Okay, but blacks only make up 13% of the population, and they can't decide elections. In New York, where I am right now, and in Virginia to some extent where you are, the white people have most of the power still, all right? The white liberal people are willing to watch this city, the greatest city in the country, all right, get almost evaporated because of ideology. I mean, I'm saying to myself, what do you need to see before you change? I understand the demoralization of the blacks, okay, and that they're not getting the information flow they should get, particularly by the clerics, the clergy. Right. The black clergy should be doing a lot more. But the whites, all right, who aren't living in the ghettos, they're still voting for these crazy progressives. I don't get it.
Well, that's because they need the black vote to stay in power. They never cared what happened to black people. Black people are still plantation slaves to them. And like the master stayed up on top and his slaves stayed in the field working like dogs, it's the same template, man. These white liberals are the same people as the old white slave masters were. They are evil people.
But Vince, you know they're not going to admit that. They're going to say, I sympathize.
I will say it because they see it. Like you said, they see it.
But you can't change it.
They know that they killed 50% of black babies. They know that the public educational system is destroying black children. They know they destroyed the black family. They know they destroyed the economic system. They know it. They have the data in front of them. They know exactly what they're doing, and they won't do a damn thing to change it. They know exactly what they're doing.
I disagree with you on this point. They don't know it.
You can't disagree because you got eyes too, Bill. They see it.
They don't care about facts.
When you don't care, that means you're evil.
Well,
when you don't care what you do to people,
you can assign that judgment.
When you destroy children,
they know what they're doing. Vince, I want to solve the problem. These liberal people, and I know droves of them, are never going to say, I want to keep black people down. I'm okay with black people getting shot in the street.
Watch what they do. Forget what they say. Watch what they do. They put children in schools in Baltimore they would send their dog to. They locked up black men in the 1990s like they were cattle. They are now allowing dope houses and drug houses to exist in Philadelphia and in Manhattan. They have destroyed the black family. And every time the Republicans try to do anything to try to bring the black man back into his family, they block it. They block school choice. They abort every child they can find.
So you just think they're just evil.
They are evil people.
These progressives are evil. I think there's a little more nuance there. But if that's true, then we can never solve this violent crime problem.
Yes, you can. People like me and you and good people have to go out there and recognize this. And recognize that we no longer have policy disagreements with these people. We have to do what Abraham Lincoln did with slavery and say it was evil. We have to do what Reagan did with the Soviet Union and say they're evil. We have to do what Churchill and Roosevelt did with Nazism and say it's evil. The Democrat Party, since its inception in 1800, has been the evilest organization on the face of this earth. With slavery, segregation, Confederacy, Jim Crow, for 100 years, they systematically stole elections, hung black men, castrated them, kept them from voting, and it took the federal government to come down to make them stop. And do you think they changed overnight? No. Then they went to abortion where they killed 60 million people. 30 million of them, my people. They destroyed the educational system. They did the man out clause to bring the black man out of the family. They destroyed the economic system. They have made the black church an apostate church by infiltrating politics in it. Yes, I say it. They are evil, and I'll never back down from it.
All right. The book is 25 Lies Exposing Democrats' Most Dangerous, Seductive, Damnable, Destructive Lies and How to Refute Them. All right, Vince, thank you for your impassioned interview. That was very interesting. We wish you all the best, of course. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much.
All right, let's bring in Hunt. He's going to fall asleep listening to me. You know, we use him a lot on The Factor. Colonel David Hunt is a American patriot, a very brave man, special forces all over the place. He was Army, regular Army, but I could tell you stories about Hunt he wouldn't want me to tell you, but he knows what he's talking about when it comes to military, and he joins us now from Maine. All right, my analysis, it was brilliant. I know you'll concede that. Did I make any mistakes?
The answer is no. I need to back you up a little bit on the arrangement between China and Russia. You touched on it by talking about how bad the Russian economy is. It's the size of Italy's, whereas China's got a serious amount of money that can more back it up. I'm not sure they can make it quite as easy as you described that. But on the current issue of Ukraine, when the Crimea fell, was taken very, very easily. I think that Russia needed supply routes getting into the Crimea, which is why they've technically owned half of that country, you know, since they took the Crimea a few years ago. The issue now is we keep thinking about Putin like an American instead of thinking of him as a Russian. He doesn't have the same concerns that you and I have, or actually anybody else in the world. The answer, of course, is we have to do extremely strong, egregious sanctions on Russia, bring them to their knees type of sanctions. And we could do a lot of that. But we really need an aggressive Europe. Those two words aren't usually used together. And a cooperative Europe, also not two words put together often, to get this really, that lesson through.
All right, but the United States has a lot of sway over Europe because their economies are tied into our economy. And if Germany or any other European nation, I don't expect this to happen, by the way. Germany will hedge and haw, but they won't break away. Because if they did break away, you would expel them from NATO. You kick them right out, okay? And you basically slap sanctions on them. That would crush them. But the Russian economy is dependent on American dollars. So they can sell, they made a coal deal I'm going to get to later. This just blows up the whole global warming stuff. They made a coal deal, Russia and China, this week. Wasn't reported in the American press. But if Russia doesn't, they can get yen for their oil. They don't want it because it's an oligarchy. You know that. You know who runs Russia. The Russian mafia runs it. It's all dollars. It's all apartments in Belgravia, London. It's all apartments in Zurich, in L.A. That's what it is. You cut that off. What do they got? They're looking at reindeer over there. What do they got there? Nothing. So you isolate them. And Europe has to go along, or you punish the people who won't. Because you know Great Britain will, and you know Macron and France will. They have to. It's the Germans you got to worry about. Am I wrong?
No, you've got to worry about the Germans. And also the issue with the pipeline in Germany, as you talked about, is not going to open up till the end of the year. But that would cause Putin a lot of problems.
Big.
I think that when you mention the oligarchs and Putin in the same breath, people need to understand that. It's really run like a mafia. And one of the ways to consider getting at them is going at the oligarch and Putin's personal wealth, which many think...
Yeah, they're going to freeze all Russian bank accounts in the United States. They can't freeze them in Switzerland, which is where a lot of the money is, because Switzerland's not a part of NATO. But believe me, when they start to ostracize these guys and put them on no-fly lists where they can't go and they can't land their private jets, they can't do anything... Then they're going to turn around and look at Vlad going, what the deuce? Is it really worth it? Our yachts can't dock anywhere? That's what's going to happen. That's why we have to squeeze them and squeeze them hard. And if we do that, then she sees that. And but if we don't, say goodbye to Taiwan, correct?
Yeah, Taiwan's a real tough issue. And yes, but don't forget the Chinese are also building their own military islands throughout the
China Sea. Yeah, they already did it. Yeah. All right, let's talk about military. So Russia's got 900,000 active military personnel. All right. Ukraine's got 200,000. If it came down to it, and it isn't going to come down to it right away, and Russia was fighting Ukraine, do you think the Ukrainians would fight back or would they pull in Afghanistan?
No, they're tough people and they're better armed than they've been. They've also lost 14,000 soldiers in the last since 2014. But with the air superiority, the artillery superiority, the naval superiority, special operating forces superiority. No one's arguing that Russia couldn't take Ukraine. The hard part is keeping Ukraine. We talk about the economy of Russia. They're going to, if they take the 47th largest country in the world, which is Ukraine, it's going to be very expensive to keep. And they're going to also take over Ukrainian Ukrainian economy that's in the toilet. So,
yeah, and then there'll be a guerrilla war. Right? There'll be a guerrilla war hand grenade. You're going to get, just like in Afghanistan when the Soviets rolled in there, you know, every day, 100 Soviets were either killed or wounded in a guerrilla war. You would expect that would happen in Ukraine, correct?
Yep. Yes. It'd be like what happened to Russia with Chechnya. And that got very expensive and they finally had to stop. It was brutal.
So you want to make a prediction on this?
Yeah, I think Putin's already won. If we don't, I mean, that was a smart move, not moving troops yet. I think we'll get half-hearted effort on pushback. We shouldn't, but I don't see the U.S. and the Europeans doing what's necessary to put real hurt on Putin. I don't see it.
You don't see them putting all those draconian sanctions on his economy?
I think not as much. And I don't, by the way, Bill, I don't, you might, and maybe when you're on the weekend with the former, with President Trump, but we won't know. That's the hard part. You won't know.
Well, they got to say what they're going to do. I mean, Biden's got to address the country and say, this is what we're going to do. Can't lie about it. All right. I'll keep my eye on that, maybe there'll be a sleight of hand. Hey, Colonel, thanks very much for helping us out. Good to see you. I'm glad you're doing well.
Who is there for the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who is helping our nation's homeless veterans? And who is helping our nation keep its vow to never forget 9/11? I'll tell you who. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's In the Line of Duty programs honor our nation's heroes and their families. That includes its Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year, dozens of golf outings and barbecues, and the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is helping to educate kids in kindergarten through 12th grade about our nation's darkest day, 9/11. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. This charity keeps its word and honors our nation's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org.
Did you know every day is a perfect day for peace of mind? With American Home Shield Warranty, you are covered for unexpected breakdowns like leaky faucets or faulty water heaters. Choose a plan that fits your budget and rest easy knowing repairs and replacements are taken care of. Simply contact American Home Shield when an issue arises, and their trusted pros will handle it according to your coverage. Don't let worries about appliances and home systems weigh you down. Celebrate the reassurance of protection. Don't worry, be warranty. For 20% off plans, visit ahs.com/bill. For more details, see ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product is being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty, which may be provided by the home builder or manufacturer. Now, you got to stay with me here until I set the factual stage, from my opinion, that this is not going to turn out well for Vladimir Putin, this invasion of Ukraine. So Putin is taking the playbook from Adolf Hitler. It's the same exact thing. So Hitler rose to power by telling the German people, hey, we got hosed in World War I, and we are the master race, and we're going to rise up again and be the dominant force in Europe. And so vote for me, Adolf Hitler, and I'll make that happen. Putin, exactly the same thing. We got hosed in the collapse of the Soviet Union. I'm going to make Russia great again. Support me, and it will happen. All right, both are hyper-aggressive individuals. They are sociopaths. They don't have any feeling for other people. Megalomaniacal. I mean, it's an amazing thing. And you say, okay, well, Putin didn't do concentration camps and mass murder. Well, 250 journalists have either been murdered or disappeared since whole Vlad's been running Russia. Now, that's a drop, I know, compared to what the Nazis did. And I'm not trying to make that historical comparison on a violence level, but I am telling you, the mentality is the same. Enter Saddam Hussein. So in 1990, Saddam invaded Kuwait. You remember, that was the first Gulf War. And it was almost the same thing as what Putin's doing now, except Saddam's soldiers raped and pillaged Kuwait. We don't have any reports yet of Russians doing that. But they were invasions. So President Bush, the elder, had to put a coalition together, all right, to boot Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. It took 7 months to do that. And President Bush got hammered. Well, when are you going to get him out of there? When are you going to get out? But Bush had to put together this very fragile coalition, Arab countries, Western countries. Biden has to do that now as well. Okay? So I'm going to keep that in abeyance, and I'm going to tell you about Biden later. But he's got to put together a coalition to fight Putin. Not fight physically, but economically. Now, I know about both of these things because I wrote two books on the Nazi regime, Killing Patton and Killing the SS. And I was actually in the Gulf after the first war there. Roll the tape.
Hello, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching Inside Edition today. We are in Kuwait City, and as you may remember, Inside Edition gave the world its first look at this place just weeks after Iraq invaded. We sent the Reverend Jesse Jackson to visit the United States ambassador who was being held captive in the American embassy. Well, now we have come back to see just how things have changed since the Gulf War.
All right, so there you go. So anyway, Saddam got booted out of Kuwait. And then President Bush made a terrible mistake by not wiping out his whole army on the so-called highway of death. I was there and let the Iraqi army go back into Iraq. And then we had to fight Saddam again. All right. If he had wiped out Saddam's army in 1990, then Saddam would have been done. But Saudi Arabia didn't want that, because it wanted to keep a buffer between it, Saudi Arabia, and Iran, and that was Saddam. And that's why that didn't happen. But then we had to go back in, and a lot of Americans got hurt, as you'll remember. Fast forward to today. So now it's Putin. The whole world knows he is a monster. Okay? If you didn't know before, you know now. There's no reason to do this. There's no reason to disrupt world order. Okay, but Putin senses weakness on the part of Biden and the West, so he did it. He wants to destroy world order, so does Xi in China, and build up China and Russia to be in charge of their spheres. That's what's going on. But he doesn't care about Ukraine. Ukraine does him no good. This is destroy and break down world order. Now, some Americans don't understand that. All right, they don't get it. They don't understand the interconnectivity of the whole world. If you allow Xi and Putin to run wild and reimpose the Soviet Union and reimpose communist China on Southeast Asia and the South China Sea, you'll have a worldwide depression. And you think gas prices are bad now, that's what will happen. Okay, so even if this thing gets worked out, this Ukraine thing, Putin, never again will Europe do business with him at the level it has been. Never again. So Putin has burned a lot of bridges here. And if you know your history, Adolf, you know, he got, what did he get, 12 years? Saddam got more than that, but both of them wound up in a terrible place. And I predict Putin will be in that same place. I don't know how long it's going to take, but it'll happen. Hannity disagrees with me. Thinks Putin's going to get away with it. I have posted that on BillO'Reilly.com, that radio discussion. Very interesting. And I hope you check it out. So how is Putin going to get taken down? Well, Russia is dependent on oil for its survival economically. Now, Europe knows it cannot buy Russian oil. China can and will, but that's it. The rest of the free world isn't going to do that anymore. The sanctions, some people think they're too weak. I'm willing to let see, because it's hard for me to calibrate how much damage, but the Russian people, they're going to get hurt on the initial round of sanctions. But Putin is going to lose a tremendous amount of economic clout. And if he continues this, then there's going to be shooting. So if he goes into the Baltic states, there'll be a war, a shooting war. You know, and then the world doesn't want any of this. So who's the bad guy? Putin's the bad guy. He's the bad guy. Now, yeah, all right, he doesn't care. I know all of that. But the Russian people, I mean, they're not living well over there. There's a lot of restlessness over there. You keep your eye on it. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. And one final thing, I told Hannity that you're going to see in the next couple of weeks a new peacemaker arise. You know who that's going to be? China. China's going to enter and say, yeah, let's sort this all out. It's a phony play, but China wants to elevate itself up to the status where it's basically saying to Biden and Putin, hey, you know, we'll broker this deal and calm everything down.
Recession and inflation are here. Gas, housing, and everyday goods are up, way up. And you want to be ready for any situation. So what would you do if there's no food on the shelf? Arc Heirloom Seeds are here to help. Did you know 99% of seeds sold today can't reproduce? With heirloom seeds, you only have to plant once. Then you can grow year after year, giving you and your family stability and security because things are getting crazy out there. Our all-in-one seed kit provides everything you need to grow your own food. This premium seed kit has over 65 varieties, 50,000 seeds in stores for 15 years. You'll also get our exclusive seed guide to make growing a no-brainer. Arc Seed Kits is a family-owned and operated business and the most trusted name in the nation for over 15 years. Our mandate is to get heirloom seeds into every home in America. Go to arcseedkits.com today and get free shipping by entering promo code podcast. That's arkseedkits.com, promo code podcast. Get your seeds, get prepared, get growing. arcseedkits.com.
It's another morning, and you're all set for work. You grab your coffee, head out the door, and your car decides today's the day it won't start. Panic sets in. You're not just late, you're stranded. Get ahead of unexpected car repairs before they strike with CarShield, the most trusted vehicle protection company. For almost 20 years, CarShield has saved millions of drivers from repair nightmares with low monthly plans that cover up to 5,000 major parts and systems, like pricey transmission and engine repairs, and check engine light mysteries. Visit CarShield today at carshield.com/Carlson. Plans include unlimited miles, 24/7 roadside assistance, help with flats, lockouts, and rental car options. Save 20% and get a free quote by visiting CarShield online at carshield.com/Carlson. Don't wait for the next surprise. Choose peace of mind with CarShield. Go to carshield.com/Carlson and save 20% today.
So here is the final thought of the day. Don't panic. Very simple. All right. Don't sell your stocks. Don't do anything. Sit tight. Nobody knows what's going to happen. I don't know. I can't tell you. All right? I don't know how crazy Putin is. I don't know if the sanctions will hurt him immediately, whether it'll take 6 months. Biden doesn't know. All right? I don't know what the next move is. I don't know what China's going to do. Don't know any of it. I do know that our economy is essentially strong. And I do know that the market will rise in anticipation of a Republican victory in November. I'm not telling you to buy now, because there are some bargains out there, but, you know, some other thing happens. Market's down 700 points in a day. I am telling you to sit tight. Don't even look at it. I didn't even look at my statement when it came in this week. I don't want to see it, because it's going to be very, very different in August. All right? Peace of mind is very important. My daughter is texting me all day, are we going to go to war? Calm her down, okay? Calm down. All right? I believe in God. I don't think he wants a worldwide conflagration. Putin is a problem. We need to crush him. Crush him economically. And I don't know whether these sanctions, I would have done more. I told you what I would have done. Okay? I don't know. Nobody knows. But don't panic. It's the worst thing you can do. Panic sell, stay in the basement, live your life. Thank you for watching. We'll have a column on this whole thing on Sunday noon, and we'll see you again soon.